Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Times Square, 42nd Street.
Take a look around. How many passengers are riding the subway car with you? 5? 10? There are millions of tiny passengers riding with you, and chances are that most of them are hitching a ride on you.
Tuck in those hands and put on your face masks, because we're talking about germs, 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 much
too small to see. So when you think of wildlife safari, does the subway come to mind? A new project from the Urban Landscape Lab at Columbia University is what they call Safari 7, a tour of the urban animal life along the 7 line of the subway system. Using podcasts and a brand new reading room, you can take a ride through the ecology and political ecology of Manhattan and Queens from Times Square to Flushing, learning about germs, oysters, squirrels, fish, dogs, wetlands, and landfills along the way. Jeanette Kim, who directs the lab, and Glenn Cummings, a graphic designer with the firm MTWTF, join me now to talk about Safari 7. Welcome to WNYC. Hi.
It's great to be here.
Yeah.
Your project keeps growing, I understand, but the core of it is a series of podcasts, Time to Play, as you ride along the number 7 subway line. Right, Jeanette?
That's right. The Safari 7 project is basically focused on podcasts, maps, and drawings that we distribute and invite people to listen to as they ride the number 7 train line. And it's really meant to be a kind of urban exploration insight, kind of using the train itself as a kind of tour bus, as a kind of a launch point into the city.
So we just heard a little of the podcast audio at the first stop, Times Square, which starts out talking about all the people and all the germs in the car with you. And we'll hear another clip from Safari 7 coming up. But it's not an advertisement for hand sanitizers, all that scary stuff about germs, right?
It's not, but it's also not intended to be scary. I think one of the interesting things about that podcast is that it recognizes that germs are just sort of part of our everyday life, that we're always going to be exposed to germs. And as much as we might think that we would, you know, want to stay away from contact, this kind of contact that we get in like our diverse kind of teeming city, literally teeming city, actually boosts our immune systems and makes us stronger.
Glenn, you call this political ecology. Are each of the stops as much about the politics, meaning the people behind the ecology, as animals and plants?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's about the intersection of...
That was a yes or no. Yes and no tone of voice. Sort of yes and no, right?
It's kind of yes, but more in a more complex way, because it's about the animals interacting with animals and the animals interacting with humans, and both of those things acting with the kind of plants and kind of other things in the environment. It's more or less kind of about overlaps. So in terms of politics, it can be literally political in terms of like human politics, or it can be kind of animal politics as well sometimes.
Jeanette, you want to add on to that? Your lab is called the Urban Landscape Lab at Columbia University. So is it just natural ecology or also political and human ecology?
Yes, it's very much a combination of those things. And I think one of the important messages of the project is that New York's urban ecology is itself kind of inseparable from issues of human health, urban development, leisure practices, and kind of the way that we use the city in general. And so some of the podcasts that we have produced kind of look at sort of unintended and intended consequences of development projects on bird life in the East River, oysters in the river, squirrels, kind of an incredibly rich mixture of plants and animals in vacant lots that are left over from land use practices.
So here's a little audio from the Queensboro Plaza stop about squirrels, and I think this will give the listeners an idea of how you use different voices in the podcasts. This excerpt starts with an anecdote about a city squirrel.
And one time the squirrel came to the kitchen window from the terrace, inside the kitchen, grabbed a chocolate and ran away with the chocolate, with the wrapping and everything. He knew there was a nut inside the chocolate.
According to Alexander R. Brash, who oversees the rangers at the city's parks department, years ago, when New York was a wilder place, rare cinnamon brown and black squirrels would have been more vulnerable to predators because they are conspicuous on grayish tree trunks. But these days in New York, nobody is trying to eat them.
Ha. Huh. So that was fun. That's not usually what I hear when I'm passing by the Queensboro Plaza stop. What was that, Glenn? Do you know that content?
It's the content is kind of about kind of the current state of squirrel population in that kind of area in particular. And do we have the credits? I'm trying to remember who the
author. Yeah, that podcast is produced by Meg Kelly and Grace Robinson Leo, who were students in a seminar that I taught at the Barnard and Columbia College's architecture department.
And the entire podcast for that stop actually starts with a clip from Sex and the City and ends with a description of Mayor Bloomberg's Million Trees program that would greatly expand what you call squirrel housing in the city. So I guess it covers all the bases.
Exactly. The different people that have made the podcasts, along with Jeanette and with the larger team, have taken really interesting positions in kind of expanding how you think about squirrel population in New York. So it tries not to be just saying the obvious, but trying to give you a little bit of a wider perspective.
We hear about chickens at one of the stops. In Corona, I don't remember exactly which stop. There are two sides to that animal, right?
What the chickens podcast looked at this kind of mixture between pest, and food, and we start to see the chicken kind of cut across all of these different relationships that we have to animals. So the chicken podcast looks at urban farming, at the way that people are increasingly interested in raising eggs by keeping chicken coops in their backyards and on their rooftops. And then we also look at that podcast that is also produced by Meg Kelly and Grace Robinson Leo, looks at the practice of cockfighting. So we see this kind of centuries-old tradition coming from many different countries around the world in which people raise, breed roosters for fighting and for sport and oftentimes profit and do this behind false and hidden walls in basements in neighborhoods throughout Queens.
And that particular podcast is at the 103rd Street stop in Corona. Why there? Any particular reason?
Well, I don't think we want to single out any neighborhood too much as a cockfighting central, but the ASPCA actually did a big bust on one street in that neighborhood, and sort of this one block became known as Galera Central, so we sort of pinpointed it there.
And Glenn, I'll stay on that podcast for a second because the audio for the egg gatherers is from the Leonard Lopate show I see here on WNYC.
Is this a question of royalties?
We'll leave that up to Leonard and his team. But what were the sources for most of your podcast? Because obviously you collected a lot of sound from different aspects of the urban environment, including our role in it.
Yeah, in some ways it was kind of the students kind of really tried to mine every available resource. And because it's really a kind of grassroots approach to it's kind of being an explorer and reporter about the environment, they tended to go anywhere and everywhere, to libraries, to kind of audio resources, things that showed up on the radio. They went and did interviews with anybody that they could find that was relevant as they dug further and further into the content.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Jeanette Kim, who directs the Urban Landscape Lab at Columbia University, and Glenn Cummings, a graphic designer with the firm MTWTF, talking about Safari 7, which is a podcast tour of the urban animal life along the number 7 line of the subway. And how can people do this if they actually want to, you know, get these podcasts and ride the number 7 train, listening to the sound bites that we played and the many others that are in there? How do they do this, Glenn? Or Jeanette?
Well, the easiest way is to get in contact with us through the website, and
so people can just download them.
Yeah, I mean the easiest from safari7.org, and the numeral 7.
The word safari and the number 7.
We would also invite people to come see the Safari 7 Reading Room, which is an exhibition that we just opened in Studio X, which is a downtown extension of the Graduate School of Architecture, Planning, and Preservation at Columbia University. And that's open during the weekdays, and you can look for that information on our website as well.
You have a 3D topographical map there, right?
Yes. We have this 3D map that shows different neighborhoods of Queens with a kind of audio interface, so you can plug in and kind of go on your own small tour within the room.
And where is that downtown extension of Columbia School of Architecture?
It's 180 Varick Street on the 16th floor, and it's called Studio X.
Right across the street from WNYC.
Conveniently.
I will have to go up there and see it. I had no idea Columbia University had this interesting outpost down in Lower Manhattan. Dogs and pigeons are also quintessential urban life, and we learn things about them in the safari too, don't we?
Yes, we actually, Brian, if I could just quickly throw in, I also want to recognize Kate Orff, who's our partner on this project, is also my co-director of the lab. But the dogs and pigeons are kind of fascinating examples because they themselves have evolved so much out of kind of like co-living and domestication with humans. And so one of the podcasts looks at like dog demographics and finds that in Ridgewood we find the largest population of Cocker Spaniels in the city. With pigeons, we also start to look at pest control cycles. And so, you know, we can look at these ways that we start to influence the environment around us constantly.
You didn't call pigeons domesticated, did you?
I should. I think the fact that we call them pigeons and not rock doves is a testament to the fact that they are kind of cohabitants of the city. And we've looked at Bryant Park. We've looked at the way that the Parks Department started to bring falconers in to take care of the pigeon population, which of course starts to create a kind of threat to like small dogs in the area, and starts to create kind of new predator and prey cycles that might not exist in an urban context.
And why does Ridgewood have so many Cocker Spaniels?
I really cannot answer that. I'd have to do a little more research here.
That's coming up in the next batch of podcasts.
Maybe. And are there other neighborhoods that are particularly breed heavy with other kinds of dogs?
There are a lot of pit bulls in Spanish Harlem. There are Shih Tzus in the Upper East Side, Rottweilers in the South Bronx, and I think that's about as many as I can remember so far.
But that podcast also talks a little bit about the correlation of size of dog versus real estate value. Mm-hmm. So the bigger the apartment, you know, I mean, basically the lower the real estate prices, the bigger the apartment you can afford, the bigger the dog you can usually afford. So there's a sort of a scalar relationship between real estate values and dog sizes. That would be nice to kind of visualize at some point.
And there you are, trying to make citizen scientists out of us all. Jeanette Kim, who directs the Urban Landscape Lab at Columbia University's Graduate School of Architecture, Planning, and Preservation, and Glenn Cummings, founder of the graphic design firm MTWTF. Together, and with others who they've mentioned, they have set up Safari 7, a podcast tour of the urban animal life along the number 7 line. You can go to Safari 7, that's the word safari, number 7, .org to download the podcast, or if you forget, we have a link right on our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. So interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. And coming up next, today's installment from our Word Geek, Aaron McKean. Stay with us.